It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, how is the new normal working out for you and your family, with your work, at home, with your kids? California Governor Gavin Newsom has ordered the state's 40 million residents to stay at home indefinitely. Now, that's the widest-ranging directive so far of any state. Iowa's governor, our governor, Kim Reynolds, doesn't see the need for that yet. She held a press conference yesterday where she announced six more cases of COVID-19 in Iowa. That brings our total in the state up to 44. It's up to us to follow the directives to keep the human cost of this pandemic as low as possible. We all know what that means. It's worth repeating, though. Limit social gatherings. Keep distance from other people. Stay at home if you feel ill. And, of course, wash your hands. Of course, the pandemic is having a huge economic cost as well, an impact on the nation's economy. Big question marks. We don't know the extent of that yet because we don't know how long this will last. And of course, it's having a huge impact on our state's economy. Let's see what we can find out about that from Chad Hart. He's Associate Professor of Economics at Iowa State University. Hello, Chad.
Hello, Ben. How are you today?
Well, we're coping, aren't we?
Yes, we are.
Okay. What can you tell us about what's in store for Iowa's economy, the damage being done now, and likely to be done in the coming weeks?
Well, I guess the first thing is we can look at the experience China had as they went through the disease outbreak there late last year, early this year. They definitely did see a slowdown in their economy. You know, estimates right now point to taking their economy from a growth rate of around 6% down into a recession, at least for the first quarter of 2020. Here in the U.S., we are definitely in the beginnings of, seeing the ramp up, when we've seen that fairly dramatic ramp up of COVID-19 cases here. We are starting to see the ramp up of unemployment, as evidenced by earlier this week, the unemployment numbers coming out, with the thought that those could at least quadruple, if not grow even larger than that, as we look forward over the next couple of weeks. And we've seen dramatic cuts in a lot of the prices of the big commodities when you're looking at, for example, oil, corn, beef, pork. The idea is all of these markets have been under severe pressure as we've seen this outbreak occur.
Mm-hmm. So let's see what you can tell us about Iowa's leading industries. Iowa's leading industries, agriculture and food production, I think number one, renewable energy, advanced manufacturing, service sector, and some information and communications technology. If I have sort of the top tier of where our economy is right there, what can you say when you look at those and sort of pull them apart and see how they are affected?
As we tease these apart, let me start with the service sector, because I think that's the one where we'll see the largest unemployment levels as we're moving forward here. As you mentioned, with California moving to stay in place, with the movements here in Iowa of, restricting social gatherings, cutting back, for example, with the restaurants being able to only offer carry out or, to-go orders, with grocery stores limiting hours. That is putting pressure on the labor markets and our service industries. We will see additional layoffs as we move through time with this disease. When we're looking at the renewable fuels markets, just the fuel market in general, with, again, these restrictions going on about social distancing, we are seeing demand for liquid fuels drop. This is why we're seeing part of why we're seeing oil prices and gas prices go to prices, lows that we haven't seen in quite some time.
Right. And you can see that very easily. You go out in the streets, there are far fewer cars, far fewer people out in the streets. And that means we don't need as much fuel to get around town or from town to town.
Correct. A lot less economic activity there. And you combine that with what's happening between Saudi Arabia and Russia as they both ramp up oil production, that's doubling that market. So when we're looking at oil prices, arguably they've been hit much harder than the general economy. The Dow this year is down 30%. Oil prices are down nearly 60%. And we're seeing the ethanol industry feel that squeeze with low oil prices that has put a cap on where ethanol can go. And so definitely that has been a factor as we look at our agricultural markets.
Mm-hmm.
When we're looking at corn and soybeans, for example, prices actually there have been fairly resilient. They're only down 10 to 15%, compared to the beginning of the year. But you're still seeing those same pressures about worries about, if in this case, moving the product into, for example, international markets. If we're having to stay in place, it makes it a lot harder, if you will, to move our products into other markets and continue normal business activity.
Mm-hmm. Do we have any way of knowing how we compare, Iowa's economy compares? Will it suffer more or less than other Midwest economies, other economies, state economies? Are we more resilient or less resilient because of our ag-based economy?
I will say this. It's really too early to tell at this point. And it really depends upon, if you will, what parts of the economy really get bogged down as COVID-19 moves through the U.S. here. If it's more of a domestic impact, and right now arguably it is, as we look at the shutdown of economic activity here, then Iowa's agricultural base is actually helpful because we tend to be much more export-focused with our agriculture here in Iowa. We produce great surpluses, which we distribute to the rest of the world. If we find that the slowdown is really hitting us as far as being able to move into the international markets, if we see our port systems start to shut down, then we become much more vulnerable to the impact, economic impacts here of COVID-19.
Mm-hmm. I wonder if I'm trying to just think of the factors that set us apart from other states. Population density might be something. I don't know if that figures in here. We have a lower population density than most states. Does that matter?
As far as the economics of it, probably not. But as far as public health spread of it,
sure,
it definitely does, I think.
Chad, what questions do we need answers to? And there are so many question marks out there in order to know better what's in store for our economy, our lives.
Well, I think in this case, what we have to do is we have to watch how other countries are working through this. The U.S. is sort of, if you will, on the back end of the curve in terms of we have seen, for example, China move through, and it looks like they're starting to emerge out the other side of this outbreak. Italy is definitely right in the midst of it right now, and we're sort of building into it. And so it's watching how those other countries recover as we get to the backside, which can give us some lead as to what should happen here. That's why I'm really watching China closely right now, because it looks like they are starting to emerge from the backside of this disease outbreak. We are seeing their economy rebound. We have seen discussions and at least some anecdotal evidence that their economy is rebounding as their public health is rebounding. And so that bodes well for us once we can pass through the bulk of this outbreak.
Right. And we are not at the backside of this, as China perhaps is, as South Korea is perhaps, when you look at those graphs of the number of new infections. And it really depends on us. California out on the forefront, having the widest ranging directives of any state so far in terms of telling the state's 40 million residents to stay at home indefinitely. We are on the front side of this. So Chad, this really depends on how our population reacts to this, whether we have a large or relatively small number of people infected. I guess infection rates we can look at between 30 up to 70%, I've heard some countries predicting. And then coupled with that, the mortality rates. Some mortality rates seen as, less than 1% all the way up to 2%. So it all depends on us, right? How well we keep our distance, stay away from others when we don't feel well, wash our hands, don't touch our faces. This is the biggest question mark, isn't it?
It is the biggest question mark, and I'll go back. It's not necessarily just the infection rate here, but if you will, how quickly that infection rate moves up. Public health officials have talked about flattening the curve and trying to, preserve and maintain our healthcare system here. I'm going to argue that's doubly important for our economy as well, because the more we can flatten the curve of this, you know, the infection rate growth, the better off we're able to maintain our economic activity, the better off we were able to maintain that product flow throughout our economy. For example, right now, when you think about it, if you're asked to be, you know, sheltered in place or stay at home, we are a lot more dependent upon the service industry to be able to deliver products to our home, since most of us aren't leaving our home. Well, flattening that curve means that, you know, there are more people available to provide that service to us, to move those products mm-hmm. along. And so just like it is important for public health in terms of social distancing and sort of sheltering in place, it's also true for the economy.
Right. I wonder, give me your view as an economist at Iowa State University, watching all the different moving parts of our state and national economy. What do you see as a worst-case scenario? And then let's talk about a best-case scenario on the way out of this conversation.
Well, I think the worst-case scenario is if we see, you know, as we've been seeing, you know, a spike up in infections, we will likely continue that. But let's say, you know, the wave hits us all at once. What you definitely see there is basically economic paralysis, for lack of a better term, because almost everybody's sick at the same time. So that there's nobody available to move product along. We're all staying home and trying to get better. And you're talking about, you know, very severe economic downturn then. Best case scenario, like I say, would be to sort of flatten this curve out, be able to maintain the economic activity that we have in place now, that we have enough folks that are healthy, that can move product and especially deliver product to those that are required to self-quarantine or stay in place. And that eases the pain. And when you're looking here, I think it's a case of, you know, then how quickly can we start to resume normal economic activity? Mm-hmm. Any way you look at it, though, we know that at least the first, you know, the first quarter of 2020 U.S. GDP will be down, but still probably be positive. The second quarter, we will likely see negative growth rates. And then it's the third quarter is the wild card here. How well we social distance will determine what our economy looks like.
Mm-hmm. What are the key indicators, the one or two indicators you will be watching most closely in the coming days?
I will be watching that, infection rate to see, you know, what we're starting to see there. And then I'm watching China's, if you will, revamping as they re-enter the world markets. Again, looking for signs of growth in economic activity, growth in trade into that market, because that, you know, indicates of, you know, how quickly a national economy can try to return to normal.
Mm-hmm. And finally, Chad, before we say goodbye, it was this week on Wednesday that ISU announced plans to extend online learning through the semester, canceling also spring commencement ceremonies. This is in keeping with what other colleges and universities in the state are doing. I wonder if you can share a little bit of what this has been like for you personally, unprecedented for all of us. What's your view there from Ames?
It is unprecedented, and it presents a unique challenge. You know, as we look at trying to maintain what I'll call good educational standing and, you know, create that educational value for our students, we are looking at, you know, trying to reach them at home. And this is where issues like, for example, rural broadband loom large. You would figure, okay, we just tape classes and they can watch it online. Well, not everybody has access. And so that's been the big challenge here as we've worked over spring break, is trying to figure out what are the ways that we can reach all our students effectively and maintain that educational activity.
Right. Okay. Chad Hart, thank you for giving us your observations, your insights as an Associate Professor of Economics at Iowa State University. We wish you well, and let's all be well and keep our distance, wash our hands, all those good things. Chad Hart, thanks so much for this conversation.
Thank you, Ben.
It's a News Buzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, looking at many facets of our new normal, our dealing with the new coronavirus outbreak. Well, some Iowa advocates are calling on the state to take major steps to limit the risk of COVID-19 outbreak in prisons and jails. Let's find out more from Iowa Public Radio's Eastern Iowa reporter Kate Payne, who's been looking into this. Hi, Kate.
Hi.
Before we get into actions that are being recommended or have already been taken, describe the unique problem that prisons and jails face during this coronavirus outbreak.
Well, as you can imagine, it can be incredibly difficult for folks being detained in prisons and jails right now to take the steps that public health officials are recommending that we all take, you know, being to socially distance yourself from people, to avoid crowded places, large groups of people, and to wash your hands regularly, vigorously. If you're in detention, if you don't have freedom of movement, if you are, you know, being held, maybe you're being processed and handcuffed, all of those things are made more difficult. And there are real concerns about, as law enforcement are coming back and forth between these facilities, staff, you know, going to work every day, that they possibly could be exposed to this virus and potentially bring it into a facility where in close quarters it could spread rapidly. And so the concern for advocates, for some folks who have been in the prison system, is that this virus could spread really quickly and overwhelm our healthcare system, which we all are relying on in this really difficult time.
Yeah, add to that the fact that Iowa's prisons are packed, are overcrowded by whatever degree. So
by 22% as of today.
By 22%. Okay, there you go. Fully packed, overcrowded prisons, and now this happens. Let's start, what actions have already been taken by the Department of Corrections or by county jails?
So I reached out to the Department of Corrections, and they said that they have put some screening protocols in place that if a case is confirmed in an institution, folks would be quarantined immediately, and anyone infected would begin treatment for the illness. They said that their medical staff is working on trying to get a hold of personal protective equipment, as many medical professionals are right now. But we don't have a whole lot of details as far as those specifics of what those screening processes actually are, what steps are being taken. Certainly, there are many people in custody who are elderly, who have other underlying health conditions, who could be more vulnerable to this virus.
What are some actions that are being recommended that have not been taken?
So the ACLU of Iowa has set out a number of recommendations that are pretty stunning, really, but these are not normal times. They want many people released from state prisons and from county jails. When it comes to county jails, according to a 2015 study, it was something like 70% of people held in county jails in Iowa have not yet been convicted of the crime that they're facing. So they're presumed innocent, but are held in these jails either because they cannot afford to pay their bond, pay their bail, or because they've been denied pretrial release. So the ACLU of Iowa wants a lot of those folks released. If they're presumed innocent, you know, they should not be held. And then as far as for prison systems, they would like inmates who are elderly, who are vulnerable because of health conditions, to be released. Also those who are approaching their release date. You know, if you have a year left, they're saying, does it really make that much of a difference in a time like this? Just let those folks go.
Mm-hmm. And also concerns about the prison staff, the staff interacting with the offenders on a daily basis.
Sure, absolutely. Because again, this virus is affecting so many of us. It travels so quickly, is so easily transmissible. And all of these folks would also be depending on our overall healthcare system, which we all need in this time. And public health officials are really urging anything we can do to slow the spread of this virus so that we don't utterly overwhelm these hospital systems. You can imagine if an outbreak happened, how quickly that could potentially spread and the danger there.
Mm-hmm. Who have you talked to about this? Has the Department of Corrections, the sheriff's departments, have they been forthcoming, or do you get the feeling that they're still kind of trying to form their policy going forward and decide what to do?
So I did reach out to the state, the Iowa State Sheriffs and Deputies Association as well. Their leaders, you know, of course, overseeing county jails. They did say that they're getting suggestions from the National Sheriffs Association, that they're hearing from public health officials in the state, and that they are putting in place some of these recommendations, but they wouldn't elaborate on what those were. And they also said that they need direction from the Iowa Supreme Court in order to really incorporate some of these things. So there are still a lot of questions there. But what we're seeing around the country, truly, is other county officials, state officials at jails and prisons, and also law enforcement officers, county attorneys, really taking steps to actively release people from these facilities, but also just to cut down on arrests during this time, trying to limit the number of people who are entering the system during this time. IPR also heard from the state court administrator, who said that the court system is considering other options during this time, maybe issuing more ankle bracelets, doing more pretrial release of folks to try and lift the load on the court and criminal justice system right now.
Mm-hmm. Kate Payne, in the minute or so we have left, what will you be watching going forward on this story?
Well, I'm really going to try and find out, will folks be tested in this system? Is anyone showing symptoms? Really trying to keep track of that. We also know in other states there are real limitations to just the sanitary options that inmates have. A colleague of mine in Arizona was able to find out that in Arizona, the Department of Corrections is now issuing soap for free because of the coronavirus. So in some parts of the country, that's the situation that inmates are in, is just trying to get access to basic sanitation supplies. So I'll be looking into some of those things here as well.
Okay, IPR reporter Kate Payne, thank you for your view of steps being taken to limit the risk of the COVID-19 outbreak in prisons and jails in Iowa. Thank you, Kate.
Thanks.
Well, I'm sure you heard the news that the governor recommended that schools close for 4 weeks. After a short break, we'll check in with one of Iowa's school districts. I'll talk with the superintendent of the Storm Lake Community School District to see how this first week has been and what plans are in the making for kids out of school for 4 weeks or longer. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, back in just a moment. And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, last Sunday, if you remember, it seems quite a long time ago. It was only last Sunday that Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds recommended that schools close for 4 weeks. Let's check in with one of Iowa's school districts to see how this first week has been. Stacy Cole is the superintendent of the Storm Lake Community School District. Stacy Cole, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me today.
It has seemed like more than a week. It's not just me, is it?
Oh, I've said every day this has been the longest year of my life, every single day.
What are the biggest challenges you are facing right now, Stacy?
The biggest challenges that we are facing as a district is the amount of fluid information that comes through, and being able to communicate that not only to our staff, but our families, our students. I think the biggest challenge for us is that we might say something today. Well, you mentioned last Sunday. Last Friday, 1 week ago, right this very minute, actually, I sat in a regional superintendent meeting where we made decisions about moving forward from that moment on. And at that point, we were still, business as usual. but making plans for business not to be usual. Within about 2 hours, we had to make decisions to cancel large events. We started to really think about the essentials versus the non-essentials. So, you know, we sat in a room, we made some decisions with the information that we had right that moment, and then 2 hours later, we had to go out and publicly make a new decision based on new information that was given to us. And I think the challenge is that as a public district, we try to be as transparent as we possibly can. And so in our case, we put out a statement to our community, letting them know sort of what our plan was, where we were, what course of action we were going to take, et cetera. But within 2 hours, in my district, that plan changed. We had some big events happening over the weekend. They would include well over 250 people. And so we had to make a different decision based on our specific needs in our community. Unfortunately, we had collectively written a letter as superintendents stating our plans. So when the other districts put that letter out and it was from all of us, then I got negative press about, well, why did she sign that? What is she thinking? And honestly, like, I think the biggest thing I would like our public to know is that we are giving everyone the best pieces of information that we have at every moment of the day, and we are not trying to miscommunicate or spread misinformation, but we're simply taking in information at rates that are more rapid than have ever been seen in our country before. And a little bit of empathy and understanding goes a long way when we're all trying to do what's best for our state and our nation.
That's a great point, Stacey Cole, because all of us feel this moving at such a rapid pace, certainly in the news business. I can understand that. let's talk about the challenges of the changes that you've made. Kids are will no longer be in the school. It's closed. To what degree are the kids able to engage in any distance learning?
So one of the challenges with being closed is that any instruction that you require has to be instruction that you can differentiate to meet all the different needs that you have in your school system. So for us in Storm Lake, Iowa, we serve a lot of kids that don't have English as their first language. So we have some significant differentiation that we do as teachers and staff to meet the needs of our kids who are considered second language learners. In addition to that, we have a significant number of kids who qualify for Title I services, for special ed services, including kids that live at local facilities who will be unable to live independently in their future. And so if we put out online instruction and that becomes our form of instruction, we have to be able to prove that we're able to differentiate for all of those different levels of needs for all of the kids that we serve. We are unable to do that. We simply do not have the capacity to meet all of the needs that we meet on a face-to-face basis in a virtual environment.
Just to break in there, if I could, for a moment. Other school districts are looking at the similar things. You've been talking with other superintendents, I assume.
Yes. We've gotten guidance from the Department of Ed. They have really talked us through the difference between, you know, offering some things online. Like, I've got a lot of teachers that they're just phenomenal. They're out there. They're leading chats with their kids every day, or maybe, you know, watching something online together and letting the kids do a chat box in. And those things are amazing. And for the kids that are able to participate in those optional environments, like, we're super excited and grateful to our staff for offering them. Where the Department of Ed and frankly the Federal Department of Ed cautions us is anytime we're requiring anything. So anytime it becomes required, then that spins us into that environment where we have to be able to show that we're accommodating and differentiating for all of our kids. So that's where we're being very careful. And mm-hmm. I know other districts in the state are as well.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the federal authorities here. Let me just read you a New York Times headline from this week to see the degree to which it matches your experience. Here's the headline. The spread of the coronavirus is shutting down school systems across the country, but the federal government is offering little clarity on when they can reopen and what they should offer meanwhile. The article elaborates on that. Is that statement true in your case?
So I don't know that the federal government has much authority as far as closing our schools. Like, we really look to the governor for that, and we've appreciated her leadership and her transparency regarding, like, her decisions. And as far as, like, clarity on what we can do, what we should do at this time, I think that they're in a very difficult situation, just like we are.
Right.
I know I have staff members, community members saying, boy, she isn't telling us enough information, you know, and giving the, you know, filling in the gray space where they don't know the answers, filling that in with negativity. Mm. I'm trying really hard to model to not do that right now. I'm going to presume positive and think that anytime our state government or our federal government isn't giving us the guidance that we might believe that we need, I'm presuming positive and believing that it's because they simply don't have the answers yet. And when they have them, they'll provide those to us.
Okay. Let's look to what I think in reading about your school district as a bright light here. Kids, of course, many kids depend on school for a nutritious meal or two.
Yes.
And you've taken some actions. You've been able to take some actions there. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so as I said, you know, last Friday we began to plan for what we thought could be true. We thought in the next few weeks. And so right away Friday morning, we sat down and we talked about our very huge concerns about food insecurity in our community and in our region, in the state. And the main thing that I had to make sure of is that our kids could continue to be fed even when school wasn't in session, because I know what the lack of nutrition does to a child's brain. And when we get our kiddos back, boy, we need them to come back ready to roll. Like, we're losing a lot of time here, and we can't risk that their brains are not getting the nutrition that they need to be at their best. In a community like ours, it does have a lot of poverty. It has kids that have experienced traumatic events, potentially as refugees and prior times and all of those things. We do not take lightly that our decisions each and every day impact whether our kids become tax-paying citizens or citizens that draw from the tax base. Mm-hmm. And we don't take that lightly at all. We understand every single day we make decisions that impact that. And I believe that food insecurity is a big piece of that. And so we just knew that we had to have a plan in place, and that the minute we were told we were closed, we had to be ready
right.
to go with that plan.
And as I see that, you have breakfast and lunch options that started this week, a drive-through meal service from the Storm Lake High School, but you also had buses that were able to make stops outside of the throughout the community.
Yeah, we did. We really debated about that sort of grew from I'll call it a lively debate about what time of day best met the needs of our families and our community to provide a drive-through service. And we really couldn't land on our local businesses all having parents with cars being able to get to our high school at the same time each day. So, you know, I know what time I eat lunch in my family, but just because I eat lunch at around noon doesn't mean that all of our families eat lunch at around noon. Doesn't mean that all of our kids in homes that really need food have a car to get to the high school at noon to get a meal in the drive-through service. And so we really just decided that for our particular community, we have a lot of kids without access to transportation. And if we're going to serve them well, we've got to go to them. And so from that, an idea was born about getting on the bus and delivering meals. And wow, have our staff stepped up and helped with this process. Wow, we've got some amazing staff members.
Wow, and I bet you've got some appreciative parents, not to mention appreciative kids for a good meal.
Yeah, absolutely. We've gotten so many grateful responses, and kids are writing thank you notes to the people that are riding the bus every day. And yeah, it's been like one bright spot in this like thing that feels like a nightmare right now.
It sure does. Kids getting lunches, breakfasts and lunches, doesn't feel like a nightmare. It feels like normalcy. So I'll just say that way.
Right.
Very good. Applause for that. Let's talk in the minute or so that we have remaining about the contingencies you may be planning for. We don't know how long this will last. You're closed for at least 4 weeks. Could it be that you would have no kids in school there in Storm Lake for the rest of the spring?
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you that... That makes me tear up a little bit. We know that that is absolutely possible. And we would just want our kids to know that if that were to happen, that we miss them and we care about them, and we will do everything we possibly can to continue to feed them and find ways to make sure that they know how much we care about them.
Yeah. Yeah, I hear it in your voice, and that's really
no reason
to be sorry. That's one of the things about this crisis is all the people you see every day, the people you hold dear. In this case, your staff, your teachers, your students, have to be kept at a distance, and then you realize
that's hard for us. We're huggers. We're school people. We like that face to face contact, right?
All right. Stacy Cole, thank you for giving us an impression on how you're coping there at the Storm Lake Community School District. Stacy Cole is superintendent. I think we'll check back at some time in the future to see how we're doing as this crisis continues. But for now, Superintendent Cole, we appreciate your candid views on the challenges you're facing, and we wish you all the best in conquering and meeting those challenges.
Thank you. Thank you for chatting with us today. We really appreciate it.
It's a NewsBuzz edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Well, let's continue talking about the challenges of schooling during this pandemic. Of course, to repeat, many Iowa schools closing for at least the next 4 weeks because of the COVID-19 outbreak. How are you coping with having kids out of school? Of course, for many Iowa schools, this was spring break. Probably a much different spring break than you had planned with your family a few weeks or a few months ago. IPR's Western Iowa reporter Katie Pikus has been looking into how parents are adjusting their schedules of working from home and trying to figure out things to do with their kids. Katie Pikus joins us now. Hi, Katie.
Hey, Ben.
So what are you finding out about the challenge that parents face in this new normal for the foreseeable future?
Yeah, well, Ben, this is a month-long break right now, which, you know, is typical for someone in college, not so typical for, you know, children 18 and under. So one of the biggest challenges that parents are facing, especially parents with younger children, is how do we keep our kids engaged and continue to learn in some way over this 4-week break?
Mm-hmm. Okay, so who have you talked to about this challenge?
One of the people I talked to was Shoshana Salowitz of Des Moines, and she has a really young kid, and this her son is actually supposed to be in daycare. He's not quite school-aged yet, but she pulled her son from daycare because, you know, there is a lot of concerns right now from everyone about, you know, keeping people in environments with even a few people. So I talked with her, and one of the things I noticed, I kept hearing this noise in the background. It sounded like her young kid, he's a 2, almost 3. He was kind of babbling a little bit. Mm. And I said, hey, Shoshana, what's your son doing? And this is what she said.
He just dumped his entire water bottle onto the kitchen floor, drove his dump truck through it, has grabbed a box of Play-Doh and hidden it somewhere. I'm sure I'll find out where that is soon enough. And then right now he is on the floor playing with a giant train set, and I'm hoping that that keeps them occupied for the few minutes it's going to take me to clean up the disaster in the kitchen. So that's where we are right now. That's kind of has been our typical morning routine for the past few days.
Wow. Shoshana is up there in the Edward R. Murrow category of describing what's going on the scene there, Katie.
So she works with a Des Moines Area Religious Council, actually, and she's very lucky in that she has been able to transition to work from home. I know that that's something that a lot of parents are struggling with right now, and actually the three parents that I've spoken with have been able to make that transition, but, you know, that's not something that everyone can do.
Yeah. Share another conversation you had with another parent. Well, who else did you talk with?
Yeah, so kind of moving west to Sioux City, or northwest from Des Moines, you know, where I am. I spoke with Angie Yates. She has two, you know, another kind of young children in the Sioux City Community School District. She is a kindergartner and a child who is four. She's a computer programmer who works from home, and her husband is a college professor at Briar Cliff, which is now teaching courses online. So, you know, they've got two young kids. They're also able to be home, and she's really into having her kids be in a routine right now. And she was telling me, we've spoken a couple times early this week and then yesterday. And yesterday she mentioned, you know, she's already had some sort of fun learning and science projects going on in the home, like making a homemade xylophone out of glasses and talking about the different tones that played when they hit the glass. And they also made slime. It sounds like a really fun household to be in right now. And
yeah, slime is so fun. Yeah.
Slime is fun. And here's what she told me on Monday about having a routine with her kids.
I think because of the length of what it is, the 4 weeks, just because the ages of the kids we have, routine is going to be vital for us as a family to stay sane a little bit.
Okay, that was Angie Yates. Where does she live again?
Yeah, she lives in Sioux City. Mm-hmm. And actually, I don't remember if we talked on Monday. We might have spoken on Tuesday. This week has felt extra long. But
indeed.
Bottom line is, you know, routine is the key word that I continue to hear mm-hmm. from parents.
I wonder, Katie, if you've talked with the parents about how we speak with young children about this virus outbreak, these set of circumstances, which any of us have never experienced before.
Yeah, I think that's one of the questions that I am still working with. I know that, you know, this is a huge, you know, unprecedented circumstance, and I'm not sure a lot of really young kids understand it yet. I know that, you know, there is some difference in a routine. For example, if you're going up to a meal site or a bus to get a meal every day through the school meals program that has started here now, mm-hmm. then, you know, there is a difference in that routine. But I think, you know, one of the questions that I'm still working with is, you know, do children understand what's going on?
Right. Okay. We'll look forward to reporting on that. But to go back to the parents you spoke with this week, you said you spoke to a third parent. Who was that?
I did. Just yesterday, I spoke with Joanna Ruddock from Marshalltown. And she's a teacher in the Marshalltown Community School District. And she's also a parent. And, you know, she really is focused on, you know, how can we keep my kids from any learning loss? And she has two boys, another two really young boys, one in second grade. Here's what she said about learning loss and her kids.
My kids and I are very fortunate to be able to have a teacher in-house, like myself, to be able to work with them individually. So I'm not as concerned about my two boys having that much learning loss. But I am very concerned about my students who aren't as fortunate or don't have parents who are able to stay home with them to keep up on any homeschool type of activities or learning like we would hope they would be able to.
Okay, Katie Pikus, thank you so much. Talking with parents there from Marshalltown, also Sioux City, and at the start, a parent from Des Moines. Katie Pikus, we'll be looking forward to your reporting here. Thank you so much for giving us an idea of how parents this week are adjusting their schedules, working from home, and trying to find things for their kids to do, productive learning things, since Iowa schools are closing for at least the next 4 weeks because of the COVID-19 outbreak. Katie Pikus, thank you so much.
Thanks, Ben.